once something snaps, it'll be a 72-hour event. Definitely unrest will start in the streets. I put the odds under 50-50 that the U.S. even has an election. I mean, at that point, you're talking civil war. It divides the shit out of the population. Once the population is completely divided, then you pull the plug. What happens to the dollar? What happens to the financial system? Purchasing power is ultimately going to go to zero. $1 million will not buy a cup of coffee. Gold is the direct competitor to the dollar, but that's going to leave the average person with nothing. I mean, if you and I understand that the dollar is toast, do you not think governments are as smart as us? I think the Chinese understand that in the end, they're going to count their wealth in ounces.
World War III is already happening.
This is a house of cards, and it is in the process of collapsing right now.
You're going to see an economic crash the likes of which we've never seen.
All right, guys, so I look forward to sharing this conversation that we had with Bill Holter with you. An excellent conversation, very insightful. The problem was we had some technical difficulties on our Zoom call. The audio was perfect, but the video, not so much. So just bear that in mind. There might be times when it's just better to have this playing in the background, but I assure you there's going to be a lot of great value in this conversation, so stick around. Hi, folks. Canadian Prepper here. It's an honor today to have Bill Holter on the channel, a renowned financial commentator, a precious metal expert, and a 23-year veteran stockbroker who currently clears through Miles Franklin. Now, what first intrigued me to wanting to have you on the channel, Bill, was something that you had said in an interview. I think it was on the channel Liberty and Finance. And you had said something to the effect of when the financial collapse starts, the whole thing could potentially unfurl in a relatively short period of time, much shorter than a lot of people think. And I know you're also a prepper, so I'm looking forward to getting your insights on that down there in Texas. How are you doing today, man? And what is your, are you feeling bearish or are you feeling bullish?
I'm doing well, thank you. bullish or bearish, I mean, that's like people will often say, oh, well, you're a pessimist. That's not the case. I'm a realist. I mean, I just take what I see, put those pieces together, and, you know, whatever the result of that is, it is. And I mean, if you look at what's going on basically in 100% of our life, it's not good. If you look at the financial system today, everything is levered. There's more leverage in the system today than there has ever been on any metric, however you look at it. There's over $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives. That means basically there's more bets than there are assets. So all the bets can't be cleared or paid off because the assets, the available cash is not there to pay the bets off. And what I was getting at is, and I may or may not have said this, but I've said it many times, is that once this thing goes, once something snaps, it'll be a 72-hour event. It'll take 3 days. And it's, I guess, maybe a coincidence, I don't know, that 3 days to a human stomach, you know, that's when people start getting pissed off, is after 3 days. But from the financial standpoint, once there's a failure, once there's a derivatives failure, and I mean, it very well could be silver or gold or some other commodity not being delivered. I mean, it could be any number of things. But once that happens, the world will spin three times. And after the third turn, I don't think there's going to be any markets anywhere in the world open. And that's because you'll have the institutions themselves failing. And we could go on a tangent here regarding the great taking. But that's what the great taking is all about, is when the institutions fail, that's when the bail-ins rather than bailouts will come. Banks are going to bail in. Brokers are going to bail in their customers' stock positions. So the event itself, once something snaps, will be very quick. And as far as the real economy is concerned, the real economy will come to a standstill because it has to have credit to run. And with a financial collapse occurring, credit will not be available. So the real economy will basically grind to a halt. And then you get to the individual situations where if they don't have food within 72 hours, you got a lot of pissed off people.
And this failure to deliver idea, could you maybe explain that a bit to people, what you're referring to there? I'm sure it's in reference to the discrepancy between the gold paper contracts and the and silver and right. the physical amounts. So, but maybe could you just like explain that to me like I'm 5 years old?
Yeah, I mean, if you have 1 ounce of gold or 1 ounce of silver, but there's 300 paper contracts against that ounce. So there's 300 people who believe they own that ounce. Once somebody says, deliver me the ounce, there's no ounces left to deliver. And I mean, on a broader scale, you know, once either COMEX or LBMA inventory is bled dry, and that's happening, by the way, in a good part because of the arbitrage. Prices are higher in China for gold and for silver than they are on COMEX or LBMA. So the natural trade is to buy in the West, sell it in the East, and have that metal delivered from West to East. You're locking in a guaranteed profit. And just one other thing I'll add, because you asked at the beginning, you know, well, why gold and silver? That's very simple. Gold and silver are the only monies on the planet that cannot bankrupt. And the world is in the process of bankrupting.
So what do you think might trigger this failure to deliver? I mean, we know that people in China, India are stockpiling gold, even on the retail level. I think the central banks in China have suspended, but in April, I believe their deliveries were lower than projected. But is it possible that this rush on, or I guess this arbitrage between West and East, and this incentive for people to sell their gold in the East will be what triggers this potential failure to deliver? Or is there going to be some black swan event that gets people to want to request that their gold be delivered?
Yeah, it's a function of supply and demand. The supply basically are the inventories that COMEX and LBMA hold, and the demand are the contract holders, whether they demand delivery or not. And I mean, demand worldwide is picking up. You even see central banks buying gold. You saw the biggest delivery month ever, I believe, for silver in India in April. So it's a supply and demand question. And once the demand for delivery outstrips the available inventory, there's your failure to deliver.
Yeah. And do you think there's any like precipitous event that you have in mind that you think might precede this type of incident where all of a sudden the demand overwhelms the supply?
Like I said, it could be any of 100 or more, you know, potential events. All you need to do is look at the daily news and you can put, you know, two and two together. I mean, just this week alone, you had the Saudi Arabian deal, the 50-year petrodollar deal. That ended on Sunday. And then Wednesday, Russia said, we will no longer use dollars or euros in our banking system or our financial markets. I mean, that's a move away from the dollar. And if you look at the amount of countries that are looking to join the BRICS, how many countries are looking to join NATO or looking to join the West? Zero, other than Ukraine. And that's a complete another story. That's a joke. But you have the rest of the world lining up behind the BRICS. So if the BRICS is not using dollars at a time that the U.S. government's got $10 trillion of debt that is expiring or maturing this year, where is the money going to come from to refinance that? Where's the money going to come from that the Treasury needs as they're borrowing, call it $1 trillion every 3-4 months? Where's that money going to come from? And the answer is It can only come from the Federal Reserve. They will print the money. And interestingly enough, the Fed and Treasury merged, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago. So it's basically an in-house, we need to borrow money. Okay, here it is.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then what is that money? What is that money worth if it could be printed free?
And it's interesting because we've had, you know, the Saudi Arabia deal not get renewed, and we had the halt of dollar trading on the MOEX, and yet the dollar seems to be ticking upwards. Typically, this happens when there's going to be a global crisis because people are looking for an economic safe haven. Is this just a natural knee-jerk reaction, and we're going to see a precipitous drop in the USD index? Or how do you see the dollar collapse unfolding?
Well, you're assuming that markets are unfettered and trade freely. And I don't think that's the case. I think all markets are manipulated. They've held the dollar together this week. What about next week, the following week, 2 months from now? And not to mention, we have an election coming up, which I put the odds now seriously under 50-50 that the U.S. even has an election. And I don't think they can have an election because those in power have committed crimes. And if they lose power, they'll be prosecuted for those crimes. So I think, you know, that's another added factor 5 months out that they need to kick the table over before we get to the election, because we can't have an election.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely talk about that in a moment. But just to stay on this topic of potential market manipulation, we have seen some very suspicious behavior of metals. We've seen gold and silver get these crazy spikes upwards, and then you get the paper slam, you get the plunge protection come in and do whatever it is they do. What are your thoughts on the manipulation of the gold market? Maybe you can share some insights with people as to how that works.
In my opinion, the gold market has been manipulated including my entire lifetime. I mean, go back to 1968, you had the London gold bull. That was an overt manipulation. Then 1976, they started trading on COMEX and able to trade paper. And after the 1987 crash, when Reagan created the president's working group on financial markets, the plunge protection team, they figured out that they can use contracts to suppress the price of gold and silver. And that's what they've done ever since. And they have good reason to, because gold is the direct competitor to the dollar. So you can't have gold going higher and moving strongly at a time when the U.S. government needs to borrow money, because gold is the thermometer saying that, you know, dollars are in fact a poor choice. And the manipulation is there to show you dollar good, gold bad.
And so right now we have a situation where the Chinese are willing to pay a premium. So it's almost as if they know that the price of gold is going to be much higher and it's drastically undervalued, and they're willing to pay that premium right now in anticipation of a supply shortage. Would you say that that's accurate?
Mostly accurate. I don't think the Chinese even care what the price is. I think the Chinese understand that in the end, they're going to count their wealth in ounces or in real goods, not in dollars. It's basically China and other central banks around the world trying to get out of the system, get out of the dollar system. I mean, if you and I understand that the dollar is toast and it's basically going to dry up and blow away, do you not think governments, you know, sovereign treasuries are as smart as us or know more as much as us? They know way more than us. I mean, we've just figured out that the dollar's toast and the purchasing power is ultimately going to go to zero. But sovereign treasuries, foreign central banks, they know this. And that's what they're doing. They're getting out of dollars.
So what do you think led to the price of gold just almost overnight, I mean, in relative terms, going from 1800, 19, 2000 to 2300. And now it's just kind of fluctuating between 23 and 24. Was there some geopolitical event that occurred that precipitated this? I mean, everybody's got a different theory, but what is your theory behind that?
My theory is backed up by a chart. All you have to do is look at the gold chart going back to October. And when was it that the United States first started talking about using Russian reserves, basically stealing the Russian reserves? And now they're talking about using Russian reserves as collateral to lend money to Ukraine. Gold started going higher almost the exact same day. And that's about the rule of law.
Yeah, that's what another guest we had on the channel, George Gammon of the Rebel Capitalist, had suggested that indeed it was this dealings with Russia and the falling out with the seizure of not the actual assets themselves, but the interest earned on the assets, as they call it, which likely will inevitably lead to a full seizure of the assets. And then concurrently, you had the Chinese really starting to buy up a lot of gold, perhaps in anticipation of this. What is your price projections? I usually I save this question for last, but while we're on the topic of precious metals, where do you see this going in 6 months, a year? I mean, so much can happen between now and then. We're really in a cycle of news now that every week another, unprecedented event occurs. But if you were to make a price target, if that's even meaningful, because of course we know that it's measured in dollars. So, but what would your price target be, say, 6 months to a year out for silver and gold?
I don't do time and price. The only time I ever did time and price was I put out on May 11th that if you looked at charts, you could see the hook forming and it looked like we were going to break out. So yeah, I did time and price there. Time and price 6 months out, a year out. At some point in time, the question is going to be how many zeros are after the number? Because the opposite of infinity or the opposite of zero is infinity. So, I mean, you could see a dollar that gets completely smoked and is not accepted, where $1 million will not buy a cup of coffee because dollars are not accepted.
Yeah, it always amuses me when I hear guys like Elon Musk talking about how they're going to be a $30 trillion company someday, thinking about exactly how much that $1 trillion is going to be worth at the time. For myself personally, I think gold is always the same price. Like I think getting into the mindset of the price of gold doesn't change, the currency that it's measured in changes, but the price is always constant throughout history. What ounce of gold bought you 2,000 years ago would likely buy you the same today.
If you change the word from price to value, then yeah, I would agree with it. An ounce of gold 100 years ago, even 2,000 years ago, is still just an ounce of gold. And what's happened since we went off the gold standard, 1971, man has started to measure the ounce of gold by various currencies. Whereas prior to that, the currencies were measured by an ounce of gold. So man has it backwards now,
Interesting.
the measuring factor, if you will.
So, how much of your analysis with people relies on looking at geopolitics? Because there's so many uncertainties right now in the numerous theaters of conflict around the globe that, in addition to the Russian asset confiscation, there's other potential bullish factors for gold here, namely an outbreak of hostilities on multiple fronts. Is this something you look at, or are you morely just looking at the technicals, or
Well, let me ask you this. Why historically does gold go higher in the face of hostilities?
well, I would have to say that it's to do with uncertainties over the stability of currencies.
Exactly. So it's not the hostilities, it's the currency.
So do you think
The
that
hostilities reveal the weaknesses of the currencies and understand that all currencies today are fiat currencies, they're credit based, where at the very, very end game, of a credit bubble. When the credit bubble bursts, so do the currencies. So, yeah, you could say that geopolitical hostilities act as a spark or a match, but it's only a precursor or a cause, if you will, to people think it through really quickly. Okay, country XYZ is going to war. It looks like they're going to lose. What's going to happen to their currency? Currency is going to go down the toilet. I mean, every country that's ever lost a war, their currency goes to zero if it's credit backed, if it's fiat. So that's your reasoning right there, why hostilities spark a move into gold, into silver, because they cannot bankrupt, yet every other currency on the planet certainly can bankrupt or default, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of that. The euro is definitely at risk. And some people might say that the United States, still divided by two oceans, having those buffers, as long as this thing doesn't go full-blown nuclear, might remain the economic safe haven and enable them to continue to run up the tab. But you're quite certain that this thing has to pop at some point.
Oh, well, mathematically has to pop. I mean, just look at the federal debt for the U.S. At this point, we're paying more than $1 trillion in interest. And that's going to be, by the end of this year, it'll be $1.5 trillion or $1.6 trillion thereabouts. Mathematically, that cannot continue. That's more than the defense budget, which is more than all the defense budgets put together on the planet. So we're at the point where the interest alone is going to eat up too much tax revenue and not leave enough basically to run the country, much less police the world.
Yeah, and it seems like right now we're just in this stasis with the markets where, you know, it's kind of ticking upwards. It's almost hit a bit of a plateau, though. When you look at the Dow, the NASDAQ, of course, is wildly out of control. But, I mean, there has to be, and it seems as though the Fed is doing everything they can to just make sure that that stock market doesn't start trending downwards. Because as soon as it does, when people pair that with their diminished purchasing power, so we're seeing when we go to the grocery store how much stuff costs. And then as long as that stock market is not going down, people will have this false sense of confidence in spite of the fact that their purchasing power is being inflated away.
Yeah, I'm going to say 10 years ago, the saying was going around, we don't need no stinking economy so long as we have the Dow and S&P.
And what is that in reference to?
Well, we don't need a real economy. As long as we have the Dow and the S&P,
right.
In other words, as long as stocks are up, everybody's rich.
Yes. And so they'll do whatever it takes to ensure that that stays the same.
Until they can't. And they've put laws in place already. And I mean, you can read the footnotes in the Great Taking. The laws have already been put in place to bail everyone in, to bail your assets in. Everything you have with a bank, everything you have with a broker, everything you have at an insurance company. The laws are on the books all over the world for these institutions to take their customers' monies, to save them, to save, quote, the system. But that's going to leave the average person with nothing. And that's where the you'll own nothing part comes in. The you'll be happy part, I don't know. Maybe it's something they put in the water, chemtrails, who knows? But
the role of the AI virtual worlds for us all to be satiated with at that point.
That's the plan.
So you think there's
now,
going to be
the plan. But if you look at the elections in Europe this past weekend, their plan's not going to plan, because you've got populace all over the world standing up saying, hey, you know, this globalism woke bullshit, I'm not going for it. You know, I'm a German, I'm a Spaniard, I'm an American, whatever. Populism is gaining big traction all over the world.
Do you not think, though, that that's part of the manipulation? I mean, we've seen so many times where leaders run on certain platforms and they claim, it never ceases to amaze me how people continuously fall for the same old tricks. Like right now you have Donald Trump talking about how he's going to end income tax. And I mean, like, he's going to make up for it by bringing tariffs on China or something. And we all know what that's going to mean. It's going to mean everything goes up in price. But you've talked about how they're going to use some kind of this type of situation that we're talking about to bring in a CBDC-based system.
Right.
You maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, first off, you're right. As far as being part of the plan to give false hope, yeah, there's no question about that. But it is it's another division. If you look at the population today as an apple pie, that pie has been now sliced and diced, I don't know, 20 different times, where you've got two separate separate sides. But when you slice it 20 times, it's almost impossible to find a single person who fits exactly in your slice. I mean, you've got, you've got the racial thing, you've got gay versus straight, you've got being a Christian versus Muslim, you've got Christian versus no faith, you've got abortion, no abortion, you have gun, no gun,
Israel, Palestine, you have vax, Russia, no vax, Ukraine.
Israel, Palestine, exactly. You have so many of these different issues, it divides the shit out of the population. Once the population is completely divided, then you pull the plug and you don't have any big groups or factions that all agree on the same thing, because that pie has been cut so many different times that even within one of the categories, you've got 10 other questions that divide that slice.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, because, you know, when I see this quote unquote woke stuff, to me, it almost smacks of they do it intentionally because they know it's going to piss people off. It's almost like they're actively stoking the flames of division by just doing the most outrageous things just to get a reaction, knowing that it's going to keep people's eyes away from what's fundamentally flawed in the system, which is what our previous guest, Rafi Farbread, indicated, that on the foundational level of corruption is the fiat-based system, and all other
currency itself.
Types of degeneracy stems from that.
Yeah, it's the currency itself. That's the flaw. The money's bad, and the money's been bad. I mean, the money's been completely bad since 1971, and the money was bad, but it had cover from 1933 to 1971, where only foreign central banks were able to convert dollars at $35 an ounce.
So you advise people to stock up on, precious metals. Is it namely just silver and gold, or is there other metals that you assist people with?
I mean, I can buy or sell any metal. I would caution people that platinum, palladium, those are not precious metals. Those are industrial metals. Silver is a monetary metal. It's also an industrial metal. Not just industrial. I mean, you have technological uses, solar uses, medicinal uses. The uses for silver, the demand, even in a bad economy, demand is still going to be there. And if things go really bad, then the monetary aspect takes over. So really, the only two precious metals are gold and silver. Those are the only two that will be, in my opinion, recognized as money.
You know what's amazing? Apparently, the demand for silver exceeded the supply last year, yet the price doesn't.
That's 3 years.
How is it the price doesn't reflect that? I don't understand that. I mean, I understand the contracts thing, but
That's how they do it. They sell naked contracts, and the price, until recently, price has been exclusively made on COMEX and on LBMA. And now you've got the Shanghai Exchange, which is, you know, trading for $4+ over prices here in the United States and London.
And is there any, you know, obviously you've chosen a life of self-reliance. Is that something that is also obviously a hedge against this? And how much of I guess your preparedness revolves around things outside of silver and gold? Like what compelled you to get off?
Well, I would just say nobody's going to protect me other than me. No one's going to protect you other than you. I mean, if you believe that the government is here to help you or here to save you, you know, you're completely fooling yourself. Nobody else is going to protect you and your family other than you and your family. So, you know, to be self-reliant, not only is it a good thing from the standpoint of not being able to have the rug pulled out from under you, like with a CBDC, you've got your capital in that system, and you and I have this this podcast, and they don't like what we're so click, they turn the account off. So it's a good thing to be self-reliant so that you can't be shut off. But it's also, it's a gratifying thing to know that you lived your life righteously and you stood on your own two feet. I mean, I qualify for Social Security in a year, and I'm not going to take it. I'm going to give that money to a charity. Never, ever taken a dime from government for anything ever, and I never will. And that's just a matter of principle. And I get it. Yes, I paid into Social Security, but piss on them.
Yeah. And so what sort of things do you got going on in terms of your homestead? Would you call it that? Or
yeah, you want to, first and foremost, you want to be away from population. I bought a ranch because of the infrastructure, and it was older infrastructure. So when I moved in here, you know, I had to refurbish pretty much everything. I've got a couple greenhouses. I've got a stock pond. I have two separate water wells. The wild game is, I mean, you could go out any night and shoot something, and that will go away. That'll get shot up and eaten pretty quickly. But you know, you want to do things. You want to make sure you have power. I've got a couple generators, which I hope I don't ever need to use, because I've got two separate solar systems, one for the buildings and another separate solar system just for the two water wells. So you want to make sure you have power. You want to make sure you have the ability to get water. I put a hand pump in one of my pump houses so that if I don't have power, I still get water. Let's say the pump that hand pump breaks. I've got a acre and a half pond that I can haul water and purify it, you know, boil it, whatever. So you need the basics. You need to stock up on food that will last. You need to try to do things to create food in current terms, like greenhouses. Now here in Texas, it's difficult to grow in the summer because it's too hot. Our growing season in greenhouses would be from September to maybe end of April, because it starts getting too hot. It's super hot the end of August, early September, but you're planting seed, and seed will come up, and then October comes and it's about the right temperature. So, I mean, just basically try to, and I've said this before, go home on a Friday, shut your lights off, shut your water off. And then implement whatever your plan is. Do you even have a plan? And if you're going home on a Friday night and it's in the middle of a city, well, good luck, you're dead. Because, like I said, 72 hours. At the end of 3 days, people's stomachs start gnawing, and parents will do anything to feed their children.
Well, I think that's a testament to your integrity as a gold broker, because I've often said, you know, like, you could tell, judge a person by their actions. And if a person is trying to sell you on this idea that, you know, precious metals are a sound investment and they're not practicing a lifestyle of preparedness, you know, I would call into question their motives. So the fact that you're doing that, I think, is a testament to the, you know, the fact that you truly do believe in this thing. And, you know, I think at this point in time, it's this is something we've been pushing a lot on the channel recently, is to encourage people to try to not only procure those things that preserve value like gold and silver, but also there's many other things that are going to be valuable. I mean, gold and silver are just means to an end. I mean, you can't eat them. Sure, you can do some industrial stuff right with them, as you're saying, but ultimately people want stuff. So if you can have that stuff in place, and then whatever surplus you have, put it into something that can store that value like gold and silver, and then that's as good as it's going to get in terms of winning strategy. Do you invest in the markets at all? Or
I do have some stocks, mostly mining stocks, got some oil and gas, natural resources, but I hold almost all my certificates. And the reason being, as I mentioned earlier about the great taking, when your broker goes down, whatever stocks you have with them and bonds, they are on your broker's balance sheet. They are not in your name. They are held on the balance sheet of the broker for your benefit. And when they go down, you are a subordinated creditor. Just like when you think you're depositing money into a bank, you're not. You're lending the bank money. And when that bank goes down, you are a subordinated creditor. You're going to get back zero.
Yeah, and I guess if people people were to consult with you, they could get advice on how exactly to do that. Because I think a lot of people, they have these trading accounts. They don't realize that their money is not in their control.
Yeah, and let me clear that up so that I don't get a million emails. I mean, if you have a question about how to do it, go back, rewind to where we are right now. If you got stocks with a broker and you want the certificates, you call your broker, you tell them you want to direct register your shares, DRS, the shares, with the transfer agent. That's basically the broker sending the transfer agent the shares electronically. Once those shares are at the transfer agent, then you contact the transfer agent directly and tell them, send me the certificate. It should probably cost you $20-$25. A broker will do it and charge you $500. So to avoid that, take the step of having the broker send electronically to the transfer agent, then you contact the transfer agent and have them send you the certificate. Once you have a certificate in hand, don't lose it, because if you do, it's going to cost you 3 or 4% in the form of a bond to get it replaced. But when the system goes down and all these shares and positions are gobbled up by bankrupt brokers, you have a piece of paper that says, I own X percent, however small it may be, of Corporation XYZ. That's your proof. That is like a car title.
Wow, that's great advice. So you guys better bookmark this video, download it, and make sure you go and do that if you still got some holdings out there. I know you're holding lots of Bitcoin and meme coins as well. Tell us a bit about your crypto portfolio.
No, you don't. No, you don't. That's complete. In my opinion, it's complete bullshit. Cryptocurrency is digital air, and I believe it was created as a pressure valve, if you will, to keep capital from the gold and silver markets.
I agree, man. I mean, clearly I'm being sarcastic, but, you know, I mean, when you look at it, when it emerged, you know, around 2008, suddenly this Satoshi character, you know, manifests out of the universe and creates this thing that everybody starts dumping their money in, and it starts being sort of tacitly promoted by the media, not directly. You know, they always have to make it out like it's a rebellious thing. But the reality is, it's just like you're saying, if all of that money were to start flowing into some other economic safe haven, which is not to say that the technology itself might not serve some use in the future.
But it does. It does. The blockchain is perfect. The blockchain is a perfect accounting system. But if you're accounting for piles of dog crap, it's a perfect accounting system of dog crap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the question is, what's the asset? And in my opinion, cryptocurrencies, they're digital air. They're nothing.
I think this is exactly what we expect to see this in this late stage of the game in terms of the end of a financial cycle, just really outlandish and absurd bets on things, trying to get rich quick. And it's, I guess it's a consequence of people's inability to want to really, you know, pour any sweat equity into anything and just trying to get as much as they can for as minimal effort as possible. And that it's that sort of rapacious greed that caused the problem.
As quick as they can.
And easy come, easy go, as they say. Now, you said earlier on in the conversation that you thought there would be no election, or that there was a, I don't want to misquote you, there was a, you know, less than 50% chance that there might not be an election. Maybe could you expand on that a little bit as to why you think that might be the case?
For several reasons. One, because the math, the financial system is really not adding up now. The math itself, as far as the debt service numbers, the debt can't be paid. And more and more people are figuring out that this is a never pay model. The debt can't be paid off in today's current terms. That's the first thing. And the table's got to be kicked over so that the powers that be can say, our plans were working except for this nuclear bomb or that pandemic or whatever. They've got to be able to point at something and say, hey, wasn't our fault. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is not just the United States. I mean, it's worldwide. But in the United States, the amount of criminality over the last 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, you could go back to 2001 with 9/11 criminality. You could go back to, and I'm sure I'm going to get all kinds of shit for this, but was Obama a citizen? My opinion is Obama was the biggest joke foisted on the American people. Just go, you know, keep going forward. COVID, criminality. I mean, there's criminality everywhere. The January 6th committee, the 2020 election. There's criminality everywhere. And if those who are in power now lose power and the judicial system is turned at them, they're all going to jail. So in order to avoid jail, they've got to put something forth that cancels the election, because they're not going to give up power willingly.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a possibility. I mean, so many things could happen right now. It could be a cyber attack. It could be the bird flu. It could be a nuclear incident.
It could be anything.
I mean, the question is, though, how many people would go for that? Because you also have a lot of reflexive contrarians out there who will immediately, no matter what happens, think that it was all part of a plan, right? And they will, at least they claim, resist this type of move by the government to postpone elections. I mean, it just seems unthinkable that they would be able to pull that off in practical terms. Don't you think they would just create another fall guy or make sure that Trump was on board with whatever the plans were going to be? I mean,
so
I'm just trying to be the devil's advocate here.
Yeah, I'm going to devil's advocate right back at you. So let's say something does happen and the election's canceled and you've got people hopping pissed off, protesting. So what? How do you get an election done when they say there's no election? How do you force an election? I mean, at that point, you're talking civil war.
Yeah, but I mean, how do you think that, like, because sometimes I wonder, if people are all talk, because often you see it happening, especially nowadays, people have gotten quite used to just sitting on the computer and talking trash online and not having to actually go out and put their money where their mouth is. I could see that, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they'll cancel the election and people will just be pacified and we'll be off to World War III and that'll be it. I mean, I would presume, though, that unrest would foment in the streets in some capacity. It
Yes.
might start.
Oh, absolutely.
So you think that there's a.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely unrest will start in the streets. But under that scenario, what happens to the dollar? What happens to treasuries?
Yeah.
Do they get dumped wholesale? What happens to the financial system? The financial system will come down. Everything's run on confidence. Credit runs on confidence. And once confidence breaks, everything breaks. And once credit breaks, nothing. And if you can think of something other than the flow of water in the brook, on your property, nothing is going to flow other than something that's natural because everything runs on credit. There's nothing that runs without credit in today's world.
So what they need is some black swan event, some I don't want to say the word, but I'll say the word false flag event in order to usher in some kind of collapse of the financial system or excuse for the collapse that would absolve the powers that be of responsibility.
An excuse, exactly. Because it's going to happen one way. It's going to happen either naturally, given time, and that may only be 6 months to a year, year and a half, who knows? But if they have an excuse, they can pin the tail on that donkey.
And so you don't see any prospect of a soft landing with this 35 trillion in climbing debt.
Not possible. No way. How?
Some people say they have a debt jubilee and they hyperinflate away the debt. Is that realistic?
Bullshit. Bullshit. Wait a minute. A debt jubilee? Okay. What does that mean? A debt jubilee means anybody who owes stuff doesn't owe it. It also means anyone who owns stuff doesn't own it. Think about all the debt that people own in their pensions, in Social Security. There's two sides to every loan. There's a lender and a borrower. And if the borrower gets to say piss off, then the lender is left with nothing. So a debt jubilee is not some kumbaya moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you're I people always accuse me of being the pessimist, and I always say I'm a realist, but you're a lot more realer than I am. It's very it's difficult because it's easy to be lulled into this state of complacency when you look at Western media and you just hear crickets and it just appears that everything is just fine. Just keep on investing. Nothing's going to happen. And it's important, I think, for people to understand that what I mean, often people of your
Well, Nate, we hear more than crickets. We do hear more than crickets from the media. And I think, and I've told people this now for several years. Be thankful that there is a media because you don't have to do your homework. If they're saying it, it's bullshit.
Just take the inverse.
And yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Bill, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I would encourage people to go and check out your website, billholter.com. Maybe just remind us again a bit about what you can help people with respect to financial consulting.
Yeah, I am a precious metals broker. I mean, I can help you with any type of precious metals needs, whether it's buying, selling, storing. We can ship to most places throughout the world. So yeah, I can help you with any precious metals needs. And I mean, obviously, in the course of a conversation, somebody's going to say, "Oh, well, I have stock with my broker," and I might mention to them, "You really want to hold the stock at your broker?" I mean, it's a broad. Finance is a broad topic. I worked as a stockbroker for 23 years. was a branch manager for 12. So I know the ins and outs. I know what the model is. And here's another perfect example. How do these brokers have big, huge buildings, a huge amount of employees, pay people $200,000-$500,000 a year, but yet they only charge $7.95 on a trade? Because they take your stock and they lend it out. And that's how, again, it goes back to the great taking. Your stock is not your stock. It's been lent out. That's how you could do a $1 million trade for $7.95. And that firm is going to make 5% a year on your assets. So if you have $1 million with them, they're earning $50,000 a year, basically risk-free to them.
Wow.
I mean, what I'm getting at is there's a lot of other topics that get brought up in doing a gold or silver trade, you know, just through conversation.
Well, anyways, man, it's been great having you on, and I hope to have you back once again. Guys, go and check out BillHolter.com, and I'd encourage you to check out some other interviews and just keep tabs on the blog, because he's always got something interesting to say. Thank you for coming out, sir.
Thanks for having me, Nate.
The best way to support this channel is to support yourself by gearing up at CanadianPreparedness.com, where you'll find high-quality survival gear at the best prices, no junk, and no gimmicks. Use discount code PREPPINGGEAR for 10% off. Don't forget, the strong survive, but the prepared thrive. Stay safe.